Hey guys, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. So, yeah, that's not true, what he just said about driving the Tesla. I have not graduated from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to answer the question, who needs meetings? I need meetings, because I'm still sick. I still suffer from the disease of alcoholism. It just shows up in different ways for me today than it did when I first came in. So I'll qualify just real briefly. I earned my seat here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober since July 23rd of 2003. I got sober 10 days after I turned 21. So I had 10 days of legal drinking. I'm kind of bummed out that I don't qualify for the Never Had a Legal Drink panel. I think an exception should be made for me, actually, since it was only 10 days, right? But how I ended up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 21, it wasn't because things were going super well with my drinking. The first time I came into the program, I was 19 years old, and I got introduced to AA via detox and rehab. My drinking started at a relatively young age. I wasn't like 3 years old or anything. I was 11. And I started drinking with my best friend because I read in the DARE book. I don't know how many people went through DARE in school, but it was an awesome training program for the young alcoholic to be, because it literally was a roadmap on like what to do after you did, you know, the first thing, right? And it starts off with alcohol. So I started there, and I immediately drank for the effect. I remember convincing my best friend, my one friend, right? Well, let's be honest here. I had one friend when I was in sixth grade. I convinced her. I was like, hey, let's get into your dad's beer and like, let's get drunk. It wasn't to taste alcohol. It wasn't to see what happened. It was because I was warned that I would get drunk, and I wanted to do that because I was not happy just being me, even before I ever picked up the first drink. Prior to even drinking, I was very, very angry. I would do things like light stuff on fire. I would steal. I was a little klepto. I lied all the time. I got into a lot of trouble. So I found alcohol, and I remember the first time I felt that feeling, right, like the buzz, like, and it was probably like just a couple of sips, because when you're 11 years old, like I weighed like 70 pounds, right? So I drank half a beer and got drunk, and I remember feeling like I felt calm, right? Like I felt like okay in that moment. And I couldn't wait to go out and do it again successfully. I threw up the first time I got drunk. I had to ride my bike home in the sun. And I'm from Arizona, and it's like 120 degrees. And if you're riding your bike outside in the summertime, you can get heat stroke. And alcohol doesn't help that. So I somehow made it home. And I was super sick and felt terrible. But I could not wait to get out there and try it again and try and do it successfully. And I chased that feeling. I chased that perfect drunk for 10 years. And what led me into the rooms finally was that I could not do life, right? Like, I couldn't do anything successfully. I couldn't say I was going to be somewhere and then be there. I couldn't pay bills. I couldn't make my bed. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't keep a job. I couldn't keep any friends. I couldn't do life. And I saw my friends who I partied with through high school and in college. I saw them. They were doing the same things that I was doing. They were drinking the same amount of alcohol that I was drinking, but they were able to, like, go to class and turn in papers and get grades other than F's and D's. And I went to ASU. I went to Arizona State University, and it's not necessarily known for its academic rigor anyway, but I managed to get the boot after two semesters with a GPA of 0.62. And how you do that, so it's zero and then a point and then a six and then a two, and that's all F's and a D, and maybe a C somewhere in there. And I didn't understand, right? Like, I didn't get it. I got my transcripts, and because my dad, he's like, well, what exactly am I paying for here? And I'm like, oh, yeah, grades, whatever. So I get the transcripts, and I'm, like, shocked that I had been failed, you know, that, like, they didn't know who I was. Like, I just expected to be passed through life. So that was a wake-up call for me. So I'm 19 years old. I've been kicked out of school. I've been kicked out of my house. And I'm using alcohol in any form I can get my hands on. And I end up getting arrested. I get arrested in front of my parents' house at 8 in the morning. And I didn't live there. I don't know why I was going there. I don't really remember the whole incident. All I know is that I ended up with a DUI. And I ended up in jail. And I ended up from there in a hospital. And then a detox. And then a rehab. And then in Arizona, we have a lot of halfway houses. And halfway houses, usually you get sent there after you go to some kind of 29-day treatment program. So there's like a bunch of us women in this house, and I had to get this piece of paper signed. I had to get a sponsor, and I had to go to meetings, and I started to see like people with more than 30 days sober, right? Because when I was in rehab, I didn't believe that anybody stayed sober than longer than 30 days. I kept hearing about these people, and they kept talking about relapse, and they kept saying, like, oh, this is my third time in this rehab. So I didn't understand that, like, sobriety was, like, meant to last longer than 30 days. I thought I was just in there to clean up, get my stuff in order, and then go back to what I was doing. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. So I end up, you know, kind of sort of working the steps. I got a sponsor in name only and end up going back out the first chance I have. And I couldn't understand why I picked up, why I had relapsed. Well, it's because I hadn't done any of the work and it got bad for me, but I ended up coming back in, like I said, 10 days after I turned 21. And at that point I was so willing, like I believed to the core of my being that my life could not be run by me. Like, I got to that place where your ideas sounded like good ones. Your life to me looked attractive. And I had met some young people when I was in the first time, and I just thought they were crazy, they were nuts, they all had cars. I didn't really believe they were really sober. But I got hooked back up with those people when I came back in, and they welcomed me with open arms. I got involved with service. The first couple of years I was sober, I was so consumed by fear, I couldn't talk to anybody. I didn't talk in meetings. I didn't talk in committee meetings. I got dragged onto young people's committees, and you guys all seemed like you had it together. I didn't know what Robert's rules were. I didn't know what WIPA was. I just knew that somebody was going to come get me, and they're going to take me to this place where there was a bunch of young people, and y'all had time sober. Y'all had like a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 18 years, and I just couldn't believe it. But what I know to be true is that the way this program works, right, is like one day at a time doing what's in front of us. And like in the beginning, the first couple of months I was sober, I had a sponsor, and we just read out of the big book, and we did the steps out of the big book, and we did things one step at a time, one day at a time. And and like inevitably life gets better because I got better, you know. I don't drive a Tesla today. I have things, but what's most important to me is this life that I have, and it has nothing to do with like material things. Like I get to come to places like at Atlanta for World. This is my second World. I got to go to San Antonio 5 years ago. I get to go to conferences. I get to serve on young people's committees, and like that's all awesome. And I don't have to drink over anything today as a result of the program, and the program's in the big book, and it's the 12 steps, right? But there's another part of like being sober that's super important aside from service, and that's unity. So that's why I still go to meetings, because I need you in order to stay sober, right? Like I know that to be the case. Like if I have just those two things, like if I'm just doing service and I'm just like sponsoring a couple people and I'm not going to meetings, I still get crazy because I don't know how to process new information very well. I'm not really good at like going through things. Like I'm certainly not a normal person, so I don't deal with fear very well, and I need to go to meetings, one, to talk about that kind of stuff, and to hear people who have gone through that before me, hear their solution. And then as a result of doing the 12 steps, like my one job, right, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who might be suffering. And how am I going to do that if I'm not going to meetings? I don't know. And I'm speaking from experience here, right? Like I've gone through periods of time where like my job took precedence over service or over fellowship. I had this really awesome, amazing, glamorous job where I got to travel all over the country, and slowly but surely, like that became more important to me than going to my home group. I started dropping service commitments. I stopped answering the phone for sponsees. And inevitably what happened is I became miserable. That job went away and I got put back into a position where I could be of service. And it was actually as a result of that I got involved with Icky Paw. And I just want to give a shout out real quick. In a couple of months, the Miami host committee is here working really hard, outreaching. We're all going to be going down there for an epic party in an amazing hotel. And I know how hard that is because I did that. I got to serve on a host committee for a large conference. And I'll tell you, it was like having a second job that you don't get paid for, but it was worth it. I'll tell you that. I was working full-time. I was going to school full time, so I did actually go back to school. I got my degree in sobriety. It only took like 10 years or whatever, but you know, I'm not like the best student, right? But like, I got the piece of paper, I got the degree. I held a job, like had the same job, worked for the same company for 8 years, and made a lot of friends, and a lot of sober people work there, and I left that place with a really good reputation. So I'm a different person than I was when I walked in these doors, and that's primarily due to the example that was set for me by people who I met in meetings. People who, you know, when I was too scared to even like look up from the ground, they put their arm around me and they told me it was going to be okay. I saw people who had tons and tons of success, financial success, romantic success, and they still showed up. They were still part of the home group. They still showed up. They still set the chairs up, and they were just one among many, and that taught me how to be, right? So like, aside from my own sanity, like, somebody did this for me 10 years ago. Somebody still continues to do it for me. Because just because I've got, you know, a couple of years sober, that doesn't mean that I don't struggle. And I need you guys, and you guys need me. And I have to believe that. And I have to believe, like, that's the most important thing for me today, is to carry that message to somebody who might be suffering, regardless if they're new or if they have time, is to show up and participate in the fellowship that has meant so much to me, right? Like, I came in, I had nothing, I wasn't very trustworthy. I wouldn't classify myself as being a good person when I came in. And it's not that, like, I wanted to be bad, it's just I didn't know how to do life very well. And you guys taught me how to do better, and you saved a seat for me, and you welcomed me, and I didn't have to do anything to get that. All I had to do was show up and be willing. So, for me, like, I could never repay back what Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me. And, you know, I think that, especially if you're new and, like, this is your first conference, like, I was super overwhelmed. I went to my first conference at a couple months sober, and I hated it. I swore off young people. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. You guys were all crazy. There's no way I would have done this. I would have run away screaming from this. This is crazy. So just shout out to anybody who's new, who's in their first year sober. Buckle up, because it's going to be a wild ride, and there's no guarantees that it's all going to be good. I heard my buddy Matt share today on the How It Works panel that, I'm going to rip this off from you now, buddy, that when you get sober, it's not like you get on a rainbow and go for a ride. It's more like you strap onto a bull, and it's like a bull ride. And like, when you said that, like, I totally get that, and that's why I come to meetings. I still show up because I get to hear stuff like that, right? And that, to me right now, that makes sense. So yeah, I'm super stoked to hear these two gentlemen share. I hope that I covered the topic effectively, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. That was really good. For myself, I have a home group that's the Hollywood Young People of Alcoholics Anonymous in Los Angeles, California. And you know, for me, I just celebrated 10 years sober, and I started the first 5 years really setting a solid foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous, because my life was a mess. And what I've spent the last 5 years doing is building on that foundation and creating a life for myself that I really want to live. And one thing that I've had to remember in doing that is that I still have a message to carry to a still suffering alcoholic, and that's been a lot harder than I ever thought it would be, because when things get good, I don't always want to go to a meeting, but I recognize that if there's someone that was like me that came into Alcoholics Anonymous without hope, I still have a job to do here. And that's what's been always reminded to me, is that as long as I'm still an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a job. So, thanks, Lindsay. And next, we have Justin C. from Texas.
Settle down. Right. Hello, everyone. I'm Justin. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, thank you so much to the advisory council, namely my friend Darren and Laura, for asking me to be here. It's a really interesting experience being here, because when at the last International, 2010, did anyone go to that? It's amazing, right? I came to a panel that I think was either, it was suspiciously similar to this, the panel of this title. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's the same title. And I remember going in there, and there was a lot of people like there is here, a frightening amount of people. And I remember thinking, man, how do they select these guys? Like, what do they do to get their name in the hat? And I realize now it's really nothing. You just, they seemingly pick at random. Anyway, it really is an honor to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is not a position I've always had, but it's a position that I've learned throughout the years. As I said, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 12/16/2006. I live in Austin, Texas, and my home group is my home group is the Brothers of the Fourth Dimension. It's a men's meeting on Tuesdays at 8. You should come. All right. So, like Lindsay kind of touched on, the first success that I ever really had was actually in alcoholically drinking. Like, that was the only thing I seemed to be good at for a very long time, right? And from a young age, I mean, I had my first drink at 12 and was already in trouble by 13, 14, 15, 16, right? And my parents, these just, I mean, just impossibly nice people who, you know, listen to NPR and read books every evening. Like, these guys had to deal with, you know, a maniac kid who was an alcoholic, right? And luckily, and I'm very thankful for this, they both came from homes that were shattered by alcoholism. So they had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous early on in the process. And I'm really grateful for that because... When I started to really get out of control, they knew where to take me, a place where I did not want to be, right, for quite a long time. And for me, here's what happened is I would drink, and I would drink as much as I wanted, right, and things would sometimes get out of hand, and then they wouldn't, right, and then sometimes I would seemingly drink way more than I ever intended, and something catastrophic would happen, and I would say, ooh, better not do that again, right? And here's how I won't. And I would devise these big plans on how not to do this again, right? And I would fail. And that voice in the back of my head that said, you know, listen, it was the circumstances, right? That's why you failed, right? You will be a successful drinker. That has been my obsession from the beginning of my drinking, was to drink as much as I wanted successfully, right? The book kind of talks about that. And so anyway, I tried and I failed and I tried and I failed, and I went to jail, I went to rehabs, I went to halfway houses, I did the cycle again, right? I moved from place to place, I stayed long enough till people usually had to kick me out violently. And because when I'm drunk, I can't pay rent, even though I really want to. I just can't do it. So when I was 19 years old, or no, excuse me, I was 18 years old, I was in a bad way, man. I was on the streets of Hamilton, Montana, which is a very small town. Interesting. Larger than I thought. All right. And at the time, anyway, I mean, it was hard to be homeless in Hamilton, and I had reached that point that the book talks about, right? That jumping off place where I could not imagine my life drinking the way I was, and I couldn't imagine a life sober, right? But because I had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came back to you guys, right? And you showed me what to do, and I did have a spiritual experience and I made that surrender that it talks about in the big book. But that was in 2003. That's not my sobriety date. What happened was, after a few years, I was thinking I was pretty successful. I was in a band at the time. It was called the Sharktopus. I thought we were pretty amazing. And I got a girlfriend, which was uncommon for me. And I thought, man, this is it, right? Like, this is success. I can kind of step away from Alcoholics Anonymous. I was young. I want to live my life, right? I don't, you know, like going to I don't like spending my evenings in church basements, right? I'm gonna step away and do something else. And what happened was, you know, all those promises that the book gave me, you know, started to fall away very subtly. And pretty soon that higher power that I had, they had gotten in contact with and had begun to start a really meaningful relationship with, started to fall away. And that girlfriend that I'm talking about became that higher power, right? And if anyone's had a relationship like that, you know it's doomed for failure. So I went on like that, and things got really bad, and the girlfriend and I broke up in a very unhealthy and destructive way. And when God leaves you, you know, what do, right? So I was back to that jumping off place, and the only option, it seemed, was to drink. So I drank, and it, and my life got so dark so fast, that I was absolutely brought to my knees by alcoholism. Yet again, in a worse way than the first time, right? So luckily, as I've stated before, you know, I'm successful at blowing things up. So I blew up my situation in Montana pretty profoundly. I got in trouble with some dangerous men, and they don't like it when you steal from them. So I had to run away, right? My parents at this point had retired to Arkansas, and so you know, I scuttled spine-bowed to Arkansas because it was my only option, right? And it was in Arkansas that I was finally able to make the surrender again, right? I had been trying to go back to AA and trying to go back to AA, and in Arkansas I was able to do that. And what I've done that was different from that first time is that I've stayed, right? I've continued to do the things that that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, when I got to Arkansas, I was absolutely without hope. I was thinking that I was a failure, and success to me looked like this. I wanted the dangerous men to stop leaving me 32 voicemails a day. I wanted the girlfriend to let me back into the big bed, right? And that was it, actually. Just those two things was enough for me. That was success. And I happened to get a sponsor who knew exactly what to do with a sick bastard like me, right? Who when life starts getting good, I start thinking that I'm the reason for that, right? And that I can control the situation, and that I am the one in control, rather than a power greater than myself, right? And so he spoon-fed me Alcoholics Anonymous while I was kicking and screaming, right? Trying to think of every excuse not to do the steps. But luckily, you know, I was desperate enough to listen. And my experience was, and is, right, that when I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous honestly and openly, right, and am willing to do what's suggested of me in the book and by my sponsors and by members of my home group, which I'll talk more about the home group in a little bit. What happens is I have a spiritual experience, right? And the way that I was when I came in is no longer the way I am at the end of the journey. When I work the 12 steps, and that journey hasn't ended, right? It's continued and it's evolved into a pretty amazing thing. And so the home group, what I want to talk about when it comes to the home group is, my home group taught me how to be a person in the world, right? All I knew how to do was manipulate people, lie, cheat, steal, do, just, you know, try to play the puppet master. And what happened, of course, is that I would step on people's toes, they would retaliate, and I would be shocked and hurt, and I wouldn't know why they were acting the way I was, right? And I quickly learned in my home group, which, by the way, I got sober in a place called Hot Springs Village, which, if you don't know, no one's from there. Don't pretend. It's actually the largest gated community in this country, which is quite a feather in its cap, if I do say so myself. So who I was surrounded by, I was 22, you know, remember I was in a band, and the band was actually a screamo band, so if anyone's familiar with the look, it usually doesn't go with the retirement community aesthetic. So here I am, this kid, you know, just this punk kid, 22 years old, surrounded by, you know, people who have retired and had 30, 40 years of sobriety. And they taught me how to be a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which taught me in turn how to be a son, how to be a friend, how to be a brother, how to be a lover, right? How to be an employee, how to be a student. Like, this all started in my home group, right? In the meeting that I went to without fail, right? Because my sponsor required that of me, right? That's where I learned how to do all that stuff. I didn't know how to tie my shoes when I got sober, right? Like, I was a mess up, right? I was just a screw up kid. So the home group has been such an important part of my sobriety. You know, I think that my sponsor helped me get sober, and my home group really taught me how to live and treat people with respect in the world, which you know, I didn't know how to do, right? So what's happened since then is what happens to a lot of us, right? You know, I didn't have an education, right? Had never graduated high school, so I started the steps to do that, right? I took the action because you guys told me to. I showed up, I did my work, which I had never been a big fan of doing. And what happened is, you know, I got into college, I got through college. I went on to get a master's degree, which was unfathomable to me, right? When I was getting sober, I had no idea that I wanted to do that, right? And I teach now at a school, which is bananas. I often get worried that students will Google me and see, you know, the dark side of me. But they haven't yet so far. All of these things is as a result of what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? The last thing I kind of want to touch on before I turn it over to Josh, who, by the way, this is a humbling experience because Josh was a speaker at the first WIPA conference that I ever went to, which was ARCHIPA. I was 9 months sober and just thought, what in the world is going on here, right? And as we often do at our first WIPA conference, and this guy told a story that really hit me in my heart, and it really is amazing to be speaking here with him. But anyway, before we move on, what's interesting is that the book, and people always talk about this in meetings, right? Is that the book talks about how this is a design for living which works in rough going, and I have been very, very lucky for a long time that life's been, you know, it's been peaches and creams, to use a very old-fashioned phrase. But recently, you know, there's a relationship that I've been in since I was a year sober is now over, right? And that has been the toughest thing I've had to walk through, I think, in life, let alone sobriety. And when I got sober, right, remember, it wasn't the girlfriend, right? But when I broke up with my first serious girlfriend, you know, I drank again, right? So my biggest fear was that, oh man, I'm going to get in a relationship, and if it's over, back to the bottle, right? And what's been amazing is, though, this has been so really painful, and will continue to teach me things for the rest of my life. Like, the thought of drinking has never occurred. Right? And that's not because of me, right? That's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. While, you know, it's hard sometimes to block out the thoughts that, you know, that this is a failed relationship, right? The fact that, you know, I can walk through this without taking a drink, you know, something that I was incapable of before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and worked the 12 steps. I mean, that, has been, you know, a sign of progress, to say the very least. So thank you so much for listening, guys.
Thank you.
Woo! Yeah!
Yeah, it's great. So... That was great. Thanks a lot to both of our speakers so far. We have Josh coming up from Toronto. For me, you know, I'm coming off probably one of the best years, not only of my sobriety, but of my life. both creatively and professionally. I'm doing things that I've never even dreamed of doing and that I never thought I could do. And it's interesting because I'm in a position where I feel like I've never needed AA more, which is not how I thought it would go. I thought that if things got better for me, when I was newer, I thought that if things got better for me, that maybe one day, hopefully, I could maybe put it on cruise control a little bit, you know. But what I found happened for me is that as my life has gotten bigger, I've just continued the need to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, because having the foundation that I have set in AA, I really thought that I really didn't think things would stay the same, you know, and things have continued to change for me, and I've had to continue to adapt. And so I've not always wanted to go to an AA meeting, but I found that it's probably something that I have to continue to do if I want to stay in the middle. And, you know, like Lindsay said, I've never found that there's a finish line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it'd be one thing if I did have if I've had successes and I've been like, well, you know, I think I'm done. Like, I think I'm good. And that just hasn't been my story. I've still found a real need to be here. So I'd like to thank our speakers. And up next, we have another young and successful AA member, Josh H. from Toronto.
Joshua, alcoholic. I'm not supposed to touch that. Church just said I'd go to five. So you're welcome. I want to say thanks for having me here. I was in Atlanta several years ago for AKIPA, so it's nice to be invited back to cities. And thank you to Lindsay and John? Yes, yeah. Okay, Justin. I changed your name to protect your anonymity. Sorry about that. great talks. I was thinking, I don't relate to this topic at all, to be quite honest. I've never had, I mean, one, I really don't think I'm that successful. I think people think I'm sometimes successful because they assume I'm like a lot younger than I really am. I spoke at a conference and a guy came up to me who I'm pretty sure was my age and was like, for a young guy, you're really well spoken. And I think he just thought I was super young. I'm not. Like, if he found out what age I was, I think he would have thought, you're actually speaking at the level of age you should be speaking. kind of like what Truck was saying, whatever tangible line exists that basically delineates whatever successes I've had in life, and my attendance in Alcoholics Anonymous has always been very clear to me. I'm not the type of person who thinks that I'm going to be okay out there in the real world without Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a couple brief periods where I traveled and lived in areas where AA just didn't exist, and it was like fucking horrible. So I don't want to intentionally ever do that to myself. I love AA. I'll be 20 years sober in a couple months, and this is still like one of those fellowships that like cracks me up all the time. We were like, the escalators are all jammed up, so we're going up the stairs, and this woman is like, we're going up the steps, y'all, and like raises her hands, and everyone just like loses their shit. Like, she had just turned around and like pooped a handful of like finely cut diamonds and started handing them out to people like she's Oprah Winfrey. And like, that's AA, or that's the kind of stuff that like makes our day. And when I was registering, like, you know, when you're registering, people just start screaming, like for no reason, and it just builds up into this crescendo of screaming because we're just so stoked to be around each other and alive. Like, that's pretty cool. So I like that. Like, that's not a bad thing. And like Justin was saying, or John as I like to call him, really my first success also was drinking. Like, that was the moment when it was like God had more or less manifested in himself, and like, he's like, my son, this is what I've created you for. And my drinking story, like, to this day, the events that occurred on my first drinking days are probably still like one of the strongest sense memories I have of what a victory feels like. And I got invited to the party that you get invited to when you're cool. I'm 10 years old. I am extraordinarily neurotic, but I don't know that because you don't know that about yourself until someone tells you that. And I take some vodka and Kool-Aid, and we start drinking it, and we start shooting fireworks at cars, which I've heard here is not illegal. And the cops start chasing us, and they corner us in a field, and they're asking us all of our names and our parents' numbers. And all my friends are, like, scared, and they're giving up their names and their parents' numbers. And when they get to me, I feel the effects of alcohol for the first time in my life. And whereas normal, I would have been absolutely rooted with fear, like just complete paralysis. I said, "Well, sir, my name is Richard Head." And the cop looks at me and he's like nudges his buddies and all. "Son, are you trying to tell me your name is Dickhead?" And I said, "Well, sir, I've always preferred Richard." And the two cops look at each other, they look at us, and then they just let us walk away free. And as we're walking away from what we had assumed was inevitable incarceration, my friends were patting me on the back and telling me that that was the most awesome thing they'd ever seen. And I knew that was true. Like, I knew that in that moment, they had witnessed the most awesome thing they'd ever see, and very likely would be the most awesome thing they would ever see. And that was when I knew that finally I was capable of doing something well. Like, that was the success that I had heard people talk about. And the thing is that I wasn't even really good at it. You know, that's the funny thing about kind of the illusion of our alcoholism is for a long time I talked myself into thinking, like, this is the only thing I do well. And everyone's like, "You're not even doing this well." Like, there is no part of my alcoholism that anyone would have looked at and said, "You're doing that really good." I was talking to drug dealing with my wife, which is a common topic in my household. And she said, "Were you ever, like, really good at it?" And I was like, "Not really. Like, I constantly..." There's two things that happened. One is I always ran out of stuff because I was dipping into my supply a little more than you should. And the other was I was really paranoid about the fact that the only reason people were calling me was to get drugs, which was by and large my job. So I wasn't even very good at that. And that was kind of my first, like, feeling of being successful. And I totally forgot where I was going with that, so I'm going to move on to a different story. The other thing I was thinking of in terms of success is, like, one of the reasons I think success is a different type of meritocracy in Alcoholics Anonymous is we sort of set the bar in a different level. You know what I mean? Like, it sometimes can be easy to feel successful here because our standards are super low. But it can also make you slip up and tell, perhaps, things that you shouldn't tell the general public. I was sitting... I work in a very professional, like, setting. And, like, the type of setting where academia is important and people have a lot of acronyms after their names. And like, I don't. And I noticed that. And we were talking about high school, and I almost slipped up and said, "I have a fake high school diploma." Because I do. And I didn't say that because I realized they can fire you if they find that out. But it was that moment of, like, just feeling like, this is me. This is, like, honestly who I am. I should be able to tell that story. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell that story. And this is that story. There is a movie I watched when I was younger called War Games with Matthew Broderick. And it's an incredible movie. In the movie, the protagonist discovers that basically you can just kind of hack in to the school mainframe and just make your grades up, and that's better than actually going through school. And when I saw that, I thought that was probably a better academic path than the one I was currently on. And so at one point in time, I did that, and as a result, I graduated with a 3.56 GPA. After having been expelled from high school in my freshman year and never really going back. And I was really proud of that for a very long time. Like, the fact that, hey, I graduated high school without ever actually having gone to high school. Until you get to that point where you realize one of the advantages of going to high school is you get an education. The other advantage is it mildly disciplines you into the action of just attending school. I tried to go back to school early in sobriety, and I discovered a very interesting thing. You will fail if you never show up. Like, you will just... carte blanche, fail if you never show up. And I found that out the hard way. And it took years of being sober and kind of hitting my head against that particular thing before I discovered something. The reason I did that was because it was a lot easier for me to say the reason I failed was because I never showed up than that I was stupid. Which is a stupid way to do things. Like, that is just an idiotic way to go about school. I'm just going to pay to not show up because that makes me feel better about myself. And it took me years to figure that out. And I also went back to school and found out that if you just show up, it's a lot easier. Like, I've kind of found in sobriety that most of the stuff I apply myself to, I'm pretty good at. Like, decent enough that I can kind of get by without people knowing that I have a fake high school diploma. And that's kind of one of the things that I did. And, oh, here's another story about why I love AA. One of the other things that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is fundamentally you guys speak my language, which is English. But there's a certain, like, element of my past that is really not, like, for general consumption. Like, people make presumptions about the type of person I am if you learn about my past. I had a similar thing where I was interviewing for a job, and they're like, yeah, one of the things we do is we actually Google all of our interviewees to see what we can find out about them. And I was like, shit, my AA talks are, like, online. You can Google me and find that out. And they didn't get back to me for a week, and I just assumed they'd found them and not hired me. It turns out they just never Googled me. So that was actually useful in my favor. The fuck was I talking about? Oh. Have you ever had that situation where you walk into a group of normies and they're talking about drinking stories? And you're like, oh, I've got drinking stories. I'm going to get in on this. And you start telling them your drinking stories, and it gets, like, super dark super quick. I was in school, and we were doing one of those, like, 36-hour projects where at the end of 3 days we hadn't slept and we hadn't eaten. And for me, like, lack of sleep and lack of food is more or less just truth serum. And we're talking about particular times in desperation that we were hungry, which wasn't even really a drinking story, but I was like, oh, shit, I've been hungry before. I can get in on this. So I told them this one particular story that came to mind. Now, this is a story I've told hundreds of times in Alcoholics Anonymous, but the story starts with this. When I was 16 years old, I was institutionalized, mostly because of bad luck. And during a period of time of that institutionalization, while I was high on LSD, I decided I didn't deserve to be here, so I left. And me and my friend escaped, and we stole one of their vans, and we crossed a couple state lines. And after about several days of not eating, we called the institution, and we got on the phone and said, F you, we painted the van, we're in Mexico. And they said, listen, if you turn yourselves in tonight, we'll buy you Chinese food. And so we did. And they came out and apprehended us, brought us back to the institution, and I served 3 months of solitary confinement as a result of unlawful flight from a state-appointed institution and grand theft auto. That was my story that I told them about being hungry. And at the end of telling them that story, I looked at them, and they were looking at me very strangely. And something really kind of amazing happened is they asked me a question that I have never been asked as a result of telling that story. And the question was, why were you institutionalized at the age of 16? Which I thought, that's not the fucking point of the story. That's the context of the story. That's not the point of the story. And the reason I love Alcoholics Anonymous is, without fail, the only question you have ever asked me about that story is, did they buy you the Chinese food? And the reason is because you guys understand what the point of the story is. And it's kind of one of those stupid small things, but fundamentally what it means for me is, you guys get me. Like, you understand who I am. As an alcoholic, like, one of the more tragic aspects of alcoholism is I am the type of person who is exerting vast amounts of energy to convince you that I am unique and I am an individual, whereas inside, I'm dying just to belong to anything, if even momentarily. Like, just for a moment to feel like I am amongst people that understand me, which is really kind of why I drank. The success that I felt when I was drinking, even though it was an illusion, was that in some way I was part of that thing that you guys were doing. Like, I could somehow commune with you. And then the way that alcoholism works is usually it tears you apart to the point where you're no longer around people. At least for me, like near the end, I was an isolated drinker. I drank by myself. I would sometimes hear people say, like, I drank because no one could keep up with me. I drank by myself because no one really wanted to be around me. Like, that was really the answer. The loneliness that I experienced was as a result of a complete lack of people because no one really wanted to hang out with me. One of my worst days out there before I got sober, I was sitting in a car next to a guy that was my friend, and he was holding a loaded gun to my head and threatening to kill me, which was making me question our friendship. I, too, had liberated some product from him that he was not taking kindly to. And in the moments that he was threatening to kill me, because I was pretty sure he would, the evidence I was using was it was nighttime. We were near a body of water. I was pretty sure he had killed people, and he had a loaded gun to my head and said, I was going to kill you. But the thoughts that were going through my head were, please just pull the trigger. I hate myself. I don't know why it is that I do the things that I do, but I can't stop doing them. Every morning when I come to, because the sun is coming through the corrugated steel that covers the dumpster that I sleep in because I have nowhere else to sleep, and then spend the rest of the day wandering the street, doing whatever it is that I need to do to get what I need, and then am unfortunate enough to catch a glimpse of myself in a storefront window, and then cringe with disgust with the fact that I lack the courage to blow my own head off, please just pull the trigger. And at the exact same time that I was thinking that, the other thought that was going through my head was, I wonder if I can pop the door handle and roll out of the car before he pulls the trigger. And for me, that was a great alcoholic internal dilemma. That was that thing where I was capable of simultaneously thinking of two conflicting ideas and acting on both of them at the same time. Obviously, he did not kill me, otherwise you'd have a different speaker. But the sum of my alcoholism is basically summarized in a couple simple words in the Big Book, which is simply, lack of power was our dilemma. Like, that was my alcoholism, that I lacked the power to propel my life in the direction that I actually wanted it to go. One of the earmarks of powerlessness is simply this. Do you find that when you execute all of your best laid plans to make your life better, even if you execute them successfully, that your life gets worse? And everybody around you, their life also gets worse. Like, if you're in a position where your life is getting worse as a result of your best laid plans, that is a form of powerlessness. And that was one of the things that was pointed out to me when I first got sober, that type of powerlessness. I can remember talking to my sponsor, and he would simply use kind of conversations of reduction to help me understand why it is that I had nothing to lose. We were just talking about what my life was like at that time, like what I thought I would lose if I got sober. And he was just kind of asking me, like, how's your life going? You have no actual relationships with other people. Your family wants nothing to do with you. You live in a car that your friends you can't live in anymore because you need to start driving to work. Like, how's your life going managing it on your own? And when I honestly looked at that stuff, I realized how bad my life really was. And that was my form of success. Like, my form of success at that time was not killing myself. Like, just trying to achieve a couple moments of complete alcoholic apathy to the point where I would be okay with the fact that I was still alive. Like, that was the best that I was doing at the time that I got sober. And what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me... Okay. That broke up my train of thought. Anyway, what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was basically the kind of life that, one, I never thought was possible. Two, I don't know if I actually would have really wanted at that time, but mostly because a lot of the things I have today I was too afraid to actually gain. Like, it was just a lot of stuff that I thought that I couldn't actually have. Like, I wasn't the actual type of person that could have these kinds of things in their lives and not totally screw it up. Because that's how I came into this program, like a total screw up. Anything you gave to me, I was going to screw it up, and I knew that. And even to the point where my first day sober, I met my sponsor on the boardwalk in Laguna Beach. I got sober in Southern California. And we're walking on the boardwalk, and my sponsor, he was an odd guy. He had like this weird like afro. He was a white guy. And he was really big into tie-dyeing, which was not something I was super impressed by, but he thought I should be. It was like... Yeah. We had a lot of conversations about tie-dye, and he just really wanted me to be in on it, but I wasn't. And he was also the kind of guy that, like, carried around boomerangs randomly. And we're down at the beach, And another something interesting happened is we're down on the beach. It's my first day sober. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't ever really relapsed. I was just kind of attending AA and drinking simultaneously. But that was my first day sober. And I meet up with my sponsor. And as we're walking around, this guy just like materializes out of thin air. And he says, "Hey, buddy, I'll trade you some hash for your cigarettes." Which, you know, on a financial level of transactions seemed to be very much in my favor. And I kind of considered it. And my sponsor did something that probably, at the very least, kept me sober that day, which is he just put his arms up, stood back, and said, "It's up to you, man. Like, it's totally up to you." And I've always felt that if he told me what to do in that moment, like if he said, "Don't do it," I would have done it just because he told me to do that. But when he laid it on me, it suddenly occurred to me that it actually was just up to me. If I wanted to be sober, I had to make that decision. And so I did. And I didn't make that transaction. There's days that I regret that. Simply from a, you know, economical transaction kind of thing. And we walk down to the beach, and he's talking about the story in the Big Book where Bill W. talks about the boomerang coming back to him and shredding him to pieces. Which I don't know why he was using that analogy, because he wanted me to throw the boomerang as some sort of metaphor about spirituality. So he's like, "I want you to let go and throw this boomerang." And I'm like, "I'm not going to do that." And he's like, "Why can't you do that?" I'm like, "Because if I throw that boomerang, I'm going to hit somebody." He's like, "That's not how boomerangs work." And so I did. And I just cranked back and I throw that boomerang and I tagged this guy standing way off in the distance. And my sponsor runs out to him like arms flailing around. And he's like, "Sorry, he's a newcomer." Like that's some type of vernacular that just any random guy on the beach understands what that means. And I remember being, like, that would be my first resentment in sobriety, was that moment. And that was my introduction into sobriety. And one of the things I've liked about kind of my path towards success is, this is like a super encouraging place to be. Like, Alcoholics Anonymous, for the most part, is very encouraging for you to kind of just do whatever. Like, every time I've had any modicum of success, the words I always got was, like, "Just keep going. Just keep going. Just see where it takes you." And I went back to school and I studied architecture. And I have one of those jobs where it sometimes floors me, where I'm like, it's kind of weird that buildings are built as a result of the shit that I do all day. Like, just these things are put into creation as a result of one guy sitting behind a computer that, let's be honest, I don't actually know what I'm doing all the time. And most of the other people I know don't either. And that type of responsibility put into my hands is sometimes just overwhelming. But I mean, what AA's taught me is, like, if you just show up and you want us to do the work, just see where it takes you. And I've done that. And I was thinking just in terms of jobs. I had a job at Subway Sandwiches when I was still drinking. And no offense to anyone who's currently working in food retail or specifically Subway Sandwiches, but let's be honest, you can do that job when you're high. Like, pretty high, you can still do a good job, unless you can't, which was more or less my case. I would show up to work, like, just without having slept, being super high, and there was this one particular time I was at work, and I hadn't slept for probably 4 days, and this customer comes in, has said something that just blew my mind. He looks at me, and he's like, "No onions." And in the moment that he said that, it was almost as like him and I had been transported into some portion of my head where both of us were standing on either end of this vortex tunnel with spinning colors and some sort of weird house music beat, which is one word over and over: onions, 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 onions. And at one point in time, I snap out of it, look down, and there's a sandwich with just like onions that I've made. And the guy looks at me and he's like, "Is this some kind of fucking joke?" And I looked at him and I was like, "Is this some kind of joke?" And it's like, here's the weird thing about those moments when you're still out there, is for me, like, some of the most enlightening moments about, to my core as a character, who I was, happened in the most innocuous settings. Primarily because when great tragedy happened, I would often just say to myself, "You are the type of person that this kind of stuff happens to. That makes sense." But in that moment, when you're too high to make a sandwich, because the Subway sandwich making apparatus is like way too complicated to figure out, so you do what a true artist does and just like randomly make sandwiches, like, and someone catches you, those are the moments when you realize how powerless you are over just staying sober long enough to make a fucking sandwich with no onions. And like, that was the best I could do with just, like, jobs when I was out there. That was, like, the best I could put together was to show up and do that. Obviously, I got fired. My first job in sobriety was, I worked at a bagel store, and I got fired from that because I failed to do my job duties. 10 minutes, all right. And eventually, I just kind of started getting my shit together. And like it's been talked about, at one point in time, I think I just became an adult. Like, I started accepting responsibility. I started accepting the fact that I am accountable for the stuff that occurs in my life. There's a period of time when I was doing my 9-step, and my life was not going well. I'd broken up with my girlfriend, and that seemed tragic. My sponsor didn't really care. I had lost my job. I had to meet for warrants for my arrest, and it felt very much like this stuff was happening as a result of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told my sponsor, like, thanks a lot for the 9-step. I'm going to jail. And he's like, you know, you're not going to jail because of the 9-step. You're going to jail because you committed a crime in the past. And he said, and I can't guarantee this, but one of the weird things about AA, my experiences have been, if you're honestly willing to kind of meet this head on, there's a very good chance you won't go to jail. He's like, I don't know if that's true, so don't, like, quote me if you do go to jail. But I have seen that before. And he was right. Like, that's what happened for me. And what he told me in that moment was, like, everything that's happening in your life right now is your fault. Like, it's your fault. You did this. This is not someone else's thing. There's no one else to blame except for you. And I guess the empowering thing about that truth was I realized that if that were true, then really I was the only person that needed to change things. And what Alcoholics Anonymous did is it put me in the presence of a power that was capable of actually enacting that kind of change in my life. I have a life today where I am part of an Alcoholics Anonymous, like a community of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor a lot of guys, and I think what I've done, if even unintentionally, I've become the type of person that if I were to just stop going to AA, it would have an effect on the people in my lives. Like, not just the immediate people, but all of the people that I sponsor, the people that I see in meetings, like, it would have an effect on them. In the same way that it would have an effect on me if my sponsor decided to start smoking pot tonight. Like, that would have an effect on me. Which is an incredible thing when you think about it, because when I came in here, my biggest problem was fundamentally I knew that if I were to just cease existing, it would have absolutely no effect on anybody. Like, that was really the great thing that I was facing, was my existence in the world really meant nothing. Like, it just summed up to nothing. There was no one that would miss me if I suddenly disappeared. The few people that would miss me would probably just nod their heads and say, well, we kind of saw that one coming. But today, I live the type of life where if I suddenly disappeared, it would actually have an effect on the world as I know it. And to do that to a person, like, for Alcoholics Anonymous to do that to a person is an incredible thing. And this is what I'll say to kind of end. I went to the World Convention in San Diego. I wasn't really sober. It was really horrible, to be quite honest. I was detoxing from methamphetamine, so being around people was not comfortable whatsoever. And we were sitting in the dome, and some jackass looks over at me, like, super jazzed. And he's like, isn't it incredible that all of us are here because we stopped drinking? And I was like, no, it's not incredible at all. Like, I didn't get it. Last night I had one of those moments where, you know, the dance was going on, and I was standing off to the side, and I see people dancing, and I just started crying. Like, just crying. And I did that thing where, like, someone walked behind me and I turned around so they wouldn't see that I was crying, because frankly that's embarrassing to just start crying, like, out of nowhere. But I am now that jackass that's going to turn to some guy and say, isn't it incredible that all of us are here today because we stopped drinking, because I actually believe that. So if you're new and you're going to look at me and say, no, it's not incredible, I really encourage you to just stick around and see where it takes you. Like, see where this thing can take you. Anyway, thank you very much for letting me be here. It's an honor and privilege.